offer you this afternoon a few stories of audacity. I think if we want to feel hopeful about what we can do for the world and for women and through women, we might look back. We have only to look at one moment in history toward the end of the 20th century, as well as the beautiful things we have seen from Vicky and others today. But let's take a moment to see the advances made, at least in the United States, briefly, during the 1970s. If someone had told me how much progress we might make simply by advancing women's knowledge, education, and giving them a broader perspective about what needed to happen for the world, and giving them certain tools, financial education, philanthropic education, and some analysis, certainly, of their place of privilege in the world, I would have said, you must be dreaming. Being your speaker after hearing the stories of what is going on in South Africa and many other places, I recognize my place of privilege. But I want to share with you, as part of the spectrum of the offerings today, that which has been my journey. And we'll go through a few things to share that story. For the past 31 years, I've worked full-time as a feminist donor organizer within the context of the social change and women's funding movements. As a young inheritor in 1973, I graduated from a privileged institution, Sarah Lawrence College, with a degree in mythology. This is a study of cultures and of spirit across those cultures. I was a seeker for justice and the promise of democracy during the 1960s, tragedies and multiple slayings of the Kennedys, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and many others. I was ignited by these incidents and fueled by the injustices I had witnessed for African Americans in the civil rights movement, as well as in the halls of my own family's residences. I knew nothing about what was going on globally. Raised mostly by African American caregivers and household workers, I knew what community and family could be. I was determined to change the economic injustice which I knew existed when I heard what weekly pay these beloved family members for me received relative to my golf playing and charitable parents who were part of the conspicuous wealth movement in the 1960s and 1970s. At age 9, I discovered that most of those who cared for me were being paid $75 a week or $350 a month plus room and board relative to the $10,000 a month in checks or stock that my parents received via inheritance or simply as wealth holders. This was a gap in a household partnership that I could not tolerate and have worked to change ever since. Nellie, my primary caregiver to her death after 55 years of service to my family, simply said, "Tracy, just love people, and they will heal over time, and so will you." Nellie embodied the gift economy and will always be my first role model for giving and sharing. But Nellie also exposed me to the realities of my class and race privilege and its responsibilities, and was diligent in her way as a woman with a third grade education, about being sure that I knew that I would have opportunities with wealth ahead. She said I should think carefully about how to use any influence as a white inheritor that I would have and expose me to people and communities outside the elitism and the illusion of my own class upbringing. I was truly blessed. I was propelled toward a vision of a just society and fueled by the social and very personal injustices for people I loved that I had witnessed. Nothing has taken me off that track since. I had moved from New York and the various places that my family had their 5 homes to San Francisco and was so glad to find a diverse and political community that was ripe for growth. In 1973, when I arrived, it was burgeoning in its need for women-led projects and institutions. As the product mostly of women-only schools, I knew well the benefit of women's voices and fell quickly into both my own preference for working with and loving women. My feminism was sparked during my own job search in my early 20s and bolstered by the growing visibility of more and more women leaders and artists making their voices heard and perspectives clear, I can remember thinking that I had found heaven when in 1977 I attended a Women on Wheels concert with women musicians donating their time to help prison reform for women prisoners. Given the interplay between the artists, the passion of the music and the poets in the room, the hope that was uncorked, and the mission to build a just society, I had found my tribe. I was sure I had fallen into heaven prematurely. It was a time of utopian partnerships. I loved and valued women and had total freedom to do so. How unusual this is and was. For 25 years, I worked and lived in the idealism of the Bay Area, starting with a team of others, women all, the Women's Building, Women's Music, funding cultural projects, local and global women's foundations, battered women's shelters, women's health clinics, children's empowerment programs, women's leadership efforts, women and people of color projects, and countless projects that have protected the civil rights of women and the disenfranchised. All in all, I've participated in the emergence of some 400 new projects or organizations led by women, 90% of which stand across the United States and elsewhere. And I have heard annually about at least 500 new projects for over 30 years. This is more than 15,000 projects that women have birthed, at least in ideas for creating change. And you have heard of millions more. I bring you optimism. At the age of 35 in 1986, after going on over 350 site visits to explore the viability or health of various projects, or just to learn about the creative capital, the courage capital, and the wisdom capital of the leaders in those organizations, I was inspired to give away the full inheritance, $1 million that I had received, and to build a movement of more engaged donors who would fund similar projects and leaders who were building feminist or social change organizations. I had a change strategy. I had a theory of change. But it had taken me 10 or 12 years to figure out what that was. It was very clear. We needed more donors and effective leaders who saw social change philanthropy and socially responsible investing as key leverage points in building a world that would work for more people and who will redistribute their wealth and power and be active partners in that new and more civil society. We needed to dismantle patriarchy and we needed to dismantle capitalism. I had no idea how. I'm still with you on that agenda. We needed more women and women leaders who understand how to use their money and their influence and who could articulate a vision for a more just society and influence people to get there. Clearly, women would be the ones to shape and leverage the changes ahead. We looked to the women's spirituality movement for our history, for the images provided so wonderfully by so many of you, to give us the courage to go forward. We deepened our spiritual practice to tool ourselves. As I traveled in the service of that mission, I was soon to see how many people wanted, in fact, to make a difference and who were eager or already on path with at least part of this mission. Little did I know that millions of women were moving simultaneously globally to bolster and propel more change. They are with us now. We knew in the 1970s that we needed culture and we needed hundreds of women's recordings, theater, publishing, bookstores, radio programs, community centers, and cafes to assure that we could find each other. We knew we needed a magazine or a way to communicate with each other on a more regular basis. The Ms. Magazine was one place to exchange ideas, and when it failed us in being too mainstream, we were sure to publish more radical dialogue or to tune into our favorite public radio stations and hear the voices of recorded by Frieda Worden, Dorothy Abbott, Maria Suarez, and others who have diligently documented our movement over the years. Worldwide, women's voices were coming forth. We had won Roe versus Wade in 1973. We were on a roll to advance the new generation of women who wanted to work or who needed to work in better paying jobs, and we knew we needed policy changes. We needed women lawyers, doctors, politicians, and we made sure that they had opportunities. We looked globally at the 1977 Houston International Year of Women. We created a platform. We rolled up our sleeves to join our global sisters. The women's movement felt unstoppable. Jill Ruckelshaus said in 1977, "We are in for a very, very long haul. I'm asking for everything you have to give. We will never give up. You will lose your youth, your sleep, your patience, your sense of humor, and occasionally the understanding and support of people that you love very, very much. In return, I have nothing to offer you but your pride in being a woman and all your dreams you've ever had for your daughters and nieces and granddaughters, your future, and the certain knowledge that at the end of your days you will be able to look back and say, once in your life you gave everything you had for justice. Everything. This was for me, and still is for many of us, a kind of inner refrain that flowed in me like the wave of feminists around me, moving women towards our full potential. The angels speak here. We knew we needed money for all our efforts, and that building women's funds or foundations was the surest way for women and girls to learn and control local and global financial resources. Albeit that many of these funds had only hundreds of thousands of dollars, we knew over time that they would have multi-millions, and we wanted women to collect, to learn how to fundraise, and to redirect these dollars powerfully. We knew we had to change the body politic to make systems change as well. Funding locally, or funding globally, women and women's leadership seemed an obvious place to start. We grew between 1973 and 1985 some 50 new women's foundations, and there are now over 125. 100 in the United States, and 25 emerging internationally. We will have, by 2020, I predict, a total of 50 women's funds globally. The Global Fund for Women began in 1983 and is now recognized as the premier of these women's funds and has managed to redistribute some $25 million from over 10,000 donors to 181 countries worldwide in only 20 years. Women donors began to convene under the Women Donors Network in 1990 through my organizing. And at the first meeting, there was $2 billion present in the assets in which these 25 women donors present were stewarding. These 25 donors were giving collectively, though not funding it all together, some $150 million each to social change philanthropy of some kind. This was more than all the 85 women's funds at the time were raising and distributing annually. Together, I had the belief that we could double the dollars and donors who were sparking human generosity, funding feminism, and investing in political leaders, and that with careful shaping, that we would at least create an alternative to the patriarchy or leverage a crack in its roots through these well-connected women at the top. These women were not just part of the top 2% of the American population, but at the top 0.5% globally in terms of their income and assets. These women had influence. But did we know how to use it? What I did not anticipate was the lack of exposure and analysis that many women donors had, and how burdened they would become in the growing needs of their local communities and families. Few of them had ever worked or given internationally. We moved them in funder tours internationally on the subject of sex trafficking, on the subject of international media, on trying to get them to understand and see through the conference at Beijing and other global opportunities. They are still moving out and moving forward. The more visible they became, the harder it was for most of them to forge and maintain a giving strategy or their own theory of change. Feminism and its theories and history were not fully understood by this generation. And I was, with Jen, a minority in our more socialist commitment. Each of these women donors became, as they became public, were besieged by thousands of requests annually, sending most of them into greater reflection and often retreat into an anonymity again. They needed staff, but were, by and large, ill-equipped to manage along with children or enormous responsibilities, and were resistant to their public roles in the face of the demands of their private roles. And yet, they found ways to strategize together and continue to find ways to move their money out. This group is now 100 women, and contributed to the last political election over $12 million in an attempt to overthrow the current regime in America. We take no pride in the fact that we were not successful or that the other side managed to manipulate the final figures. Women have always been leaders in the gift economy, and women donors who reject the exchange model of philanthropy, and unfortunately philanthropy has become more of an exchange model as men have gotten more involved, but those who do reject this exchange model of philanthropy are liberated into the simple joy of giving, of purely giving. The question is, shall we keep developing alternative communities and economies? How then shall we influence men and boys and others to make systemic change? And what are the leverage points? Women's shelters began first in the anti-violence movement in the late 70s, programs for perpetrators or for violence prevention, but those men who have truly stepped up to change the conditions of violence in America are few and far between. We honor those of you in the room who are here. Women have always managed to convene and express their passions for justice. In the 19th century, women came forward at the time of the Underground Railroad when the slaves were moving from the south to the north in the U.S. A white woman would place a quilt upside down on her clothesline to signal that food and water would be waiting in the basement for the slaves, those slaves seeking freedom to the north. This in the face of many of their husbands being part of the KKK, no doubt. Women have convened in the public sector and helped each other in partnerships and non-hierarchical formats, from quilting bees in the 19th century to childcare cooperatives, driving cooperatives, book groups, sports teams, church ladies, tzedakah circles, caregiving groups, to business and professional groups, investment groups, microloan groups, and then women's foundations. In the 21st century, it is women's giving circles that are emerging as the preferred model of women's collectivity. These giving circles are headed by women with shared monies going generally to women-serving or women-led community-based organizations. Women give $5, $25, $50, $100, $1,500, or $25,000. It is up to them how much they contribute. There are now hundreds of these in the United States, and there will be thousands of them. We must claim them and shape them as the evolution of feminism and the ways, just like the 12-step programs and the women's spirituality circles, that demonstrate the power and collectivity of collaboration. And we must teach and partner with these women to learn more about how to be effective social change activists. I have been thrilled at the women's giving circles, but wanted to for women to give up control through giving to more community-based foundations. The politically powerful model would be the community-based model in which donors would pool and collectivize their activism with grassroots activists, creating, I thought, better decision-making, not just for donors to only be making the decisions, but for it to be a more community-based process. The more community-based decisions were made by activists at the table, the more we would really understand that which needed to change. This was clear. Either way, women do learn and understand the power of sharing and engagement. The lessons of giving up class-based control may take for many a lifetime. Nonetheless, the gift of the women's funding movement has been a significant move toward the democratization of philanthropy. We knew that the public sector, 70% of women now fill the public sector. There are only 30% of people working in the nonprofit sector are men. We must expect no less of the women in this sector than to create radical and dramatic change. How best to do that? Counterbalancing that which goes on in government and that which goes on, certainly, in business. We must deepen and diversify in order to make that critical change. If someone had told me that my sense of abundance and hope would come from giving all that I inherited and by stepping up to give over 50% of what I earned, I would say, you've got to be kidding. Jen Vaughn's dedication to her philosophy and her setting up of nonprofits and the staff who have given freely to support so many of these projects in the public for free. And she invested over $18 million of her own money, and her ongoing tenacious dedication to shifting the paradigm and presenting a roadmap to do so will always daily be an inspiration to me and others. I know well that mistakes and judgment come with fatigue, as one is hoped to be a visible, if not fully accessible, bridge in this work. I spend half my time working with donors and half my time listening to those who do not have resources to see how I might best connect them. I know, too, that making and being called to make so many decisions and involves the exploration and challenges of expressing power. We were trained to lead and to dominate. When I have fallen short of my own potential as a leader, or better yet, as a partner, I have taken spiritual guidance from others who are trying to make similar changes. Jen is one. Our shared difficulties as products of the patriarchy with respect to power and domination is natural. We who did not want to be seen as dominators or matriarchs means we have had to suffer at times by not having the skillfulness or consciousness needed to broadly redistribute power or resources while holding on to our own and others' developing wisdoms. But no one can say that we have not experimented or done everything possible to try to bring justice and feminine values to the table. Jen, I make a deep bow to you for all that you and your band of angels have done. True audacity is in our midst. And I thank each of you for all that I have heard and seen of your legacies and your activism. Thank you. Thank you. I'm not quite done, sorry. The key is now how to make visible the stories and dreams and work that is going on for countless others. This will take a revolution in the media and our use of it. We need more daring and caring women donors to advance all that has been laid. Younger women demand our politicization and speaking up. We have found our voices, but we are still learning to use our passion and our leadership and our voices effectively. A quite amazing infrastructure really has been laid in only 30 years. I'm the first to admit that feminist values have been cloaked or dropped out visibly for making of this past 15 years of this revolution. It was intentional. We've had a choice to expand the movement and then politicize it, or face the limitations of the feminist movement in the mid and late 80s. We chose to expand the movement and are now busy working very hard to politicize it. Perhaps we made the wrong choice, but we are working very hard and need your help to deepen. Given the fears present now and the hesitations of so many, I completely agree that we must bring back front and center a vision of a just society and how best to get there. Many agree that women are the guides to lead us to survival. I also agree that languaging and how we express ourselves and our vision must be inspiring and ignite against the passions and hopes of all citizens. Our time is seemingly, sadly short to save the planet. Yes, the future of humanity does depend on this strategy and how we unfold it. In the end, I do not know if prayer or activism will save the world. I know I am called with you to do both. It is very hard to face that after 30 years of full-time work that the richest 20% have more income, in fact 75 times that of the poorest 20% of the world, up 30 times as much as in 1960, and that half the world's population lives on less than $2 a day. But that is where we are, and we must continue to educate and effect the radical change needed to bring capitalism and the patriarchy to its conscience, if not its knees. Recently in Scotland, for a visit to see the physical presence of the Divine Feminine with Margie Adam, another feminist activist, about the time of the Iraqi prison abuses, I was given a message there, as spirits are keen to do. It was a message of the kind that is the gift economy, not tied up in the complexities of matriarchy or patriarchy, capitalism or socialism. It was simply this: the world speeds up, but you must infuse wisdom, this spirit and hope, in the honored practices of indigenous peoples everywhere. Women and caring men must counterbalance and stop the exponential destruction being perpetrated by their exponential and effective good. Step up and step out. Make the dreamers and the dream makers more visible. Make your vision for a just society clear and get out of the fog. And so my journey for justice continues, and so too yours. Transformation is a gift delivered through faith and feminism and action. We are on path. Let us simply invite and engage the millions who seek our sharing, our sustainable ways, and our affirming bridge building to another way, a joyous giving way. It is not too late. I see thousands of people of goodwill doing good deeds daily. I've been on the road now for 200 days a year for over 25 years, and I'm perhaps the most hopeful person you shall ever meet. Yes, Las Vegas is a reminder, and so, too, the devastation of AIDS in rural Africa. But we are here to turn the tide. In the end, Jeanette Armstrong's message is, along with Ishmael's, the key. Giving is the only way to be fully human. Will we be takers or givers? We know the power of giving. 85% of Americans now give philanthropically. 61% volunteer 3.3 hours a week, but they are not making structural change. Our task is not impossible. It is about taking what we have done and becoming more effective spokespeople for the clear changes needed. We shall go forth. We shall inspire others with the tenacity and solidarity of the movement of agrarian women of Argentina. If you have not read the new book that was gifted us, I urge you to run to the end of the book and read this fabulous story. May the spirit of abundance and hope continue to grace us each as we do this powerful realignment work. Let us go forth with confidence in our call and our collective capacities. Let us, above all, partner and share with each other from this day forward with love. Thank you.